This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Danger! Danger!
It's not a lineup, it's not an army, it's not a stable, and it's not a family. It's an alliance of businessmen.
Take it right.
Place to Be Nation, you're listening to the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, featuring a different way to look at and debate the history of wrestling. And now, your co-host, the PTBN PWO two-man power trip, JT and Will.
The Dangerous Alliance would rather die than surrender to you.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to episode number 10 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. I am your co-host, JT, and with me, as always, is good old Will from Texas. Will, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. A day older and... Almost a year older. Yeah, almost a year older, and not feeling the wiser, you know.
Well, yeah, see, I want to say it now, because I'll forget at the end of the episode and then be mad I forgot. So, happy birthday to you coming up this week, so... Welcome to whatever.
Appreciate
you are.
That.
Leave that alone. And with us, as always, the man who never ages. If you see all his pictures, he's the picture of youthful exuberance, and that is Dan McGinn. Dan, how are you?
I'm good, guys. I just started watching Game of Thrones this weekend, and so if it sounds like I'm about to eat a live horse heart on the air, it's probably true.
Like you're just starting season one.
Just started. Just finished season one, actually, last night.
Oh, you're in for a roller coaster. Have fun.
I've never seen an episode. How's that? How do you feel about that?
Y'all need to jump in on that, man. Okay. I've read the books. I keep up with, like, the fan sightings, all that shit. I'm big into Game of Thrones.
That's awesome. I bet you more as a Harry Potter guy, but...
I love Harry Potter,
there you go.
Too,
okay,
man.
See, I knew it. I hope Basil's okay over there, Dan. You're not going to eat his heart, are you?
You know what? He's so little, it wouldn't really satisfy the hunger inside me, really. So, okay. Really just a big horse heart. That's really all I need.
This is going to a weird spot, so we're going to back off. But, Will, can you believe it's already been, it'll be 10 episodes when we wrap this one up tonight. Can you believe how quickly this has gone?
I'm surprised Dan doesn't want to strangle me yet. I'm impressed.
Well, he may want to, but he's too nice to say anything about it, so it's definitely possible. I don't, so that's something. Where are we at in the swear jar? I know you racked up a couple, and we apparently missed one that we're not going to count because we didn't hear it, but it was in.
Yeah, I'm at three. You're at one. Right. I think I've already come to the conclusion that for Christmas, both you and Dan are going to get a subscription to NWA Classics.
All right, I like it.
And to make sure that, you know, y'all don't turn around and just, like, you know, buy dog food for Basil or. You know, whatever.
Get Basil that heart transplant he needs.
We'll actually do an NWA Classics, like, live watch or something.
Okay. I would never do that. I would never besmirch you like that, your kindness. And speaking of kindness, we are kindly going to deliver three fun games, as always, here tonight. We have two new ones, I think, is what I've heard from Dan, and maybe one repeat, but we'll see what he breaks out of the vault for us. And, Dan, why don't we waste no more time and dive into challenge number one.
Fellas, your first fall is a brand new game, and it's a doozy. So why not, while we're in the mood, let's just call this one the Game of Thrones.
Okay. And I was bullied into this title. I have no idea how the name Game of Thrones plays into anything with the game that we have here, but we'll go with it. So, Will, this is how we're going to do things. Dan has 16 randomized matches. We've built a bracket. And tournament style, we'll be determining... Of these 16, what was the greatest match that featured a world title change? Now, we each contributed 8 matches to the list, and they could be from any promotion, any time frame, and Dan has randomized them, bucketed them up, and we're going to go bracket style. You and I are going to debate match by match which match should go on, or I guess, you know, bracket by bracket, what match should advance on, and we'll determine of these 16 solely, which is the best world title change match. And Dan will be our tiebreaker. If we're stuck and we can't come to a consensus on one, he will weigh in and advance one. So
now, before we start the timer here, I want to ask, are we doing it on match quality or are we doing it on match importance?
I think I won't say importance, but how about just overall this everything factored in? So, I mean, okay. We shouldn't penalize it if it's a great match just because it wasn't super important, but also we shouldn't penalize super important matches that had great atmosphere if they weren't great in the ring. So I think it's the entire package as an offering. You know, we're trying to come up with the one match to introduce to like a newer fan that means something, has a lot to it that may hook them. So something along those lines.
I like it.
Okay. All right, Dan, so what is match number one from round number one?
Your first match, guys, will feature Jerry the King Lawler and Kurt Hennig from May the 9th of 1988 in Memphis for the AWA World title, and that is paired up against Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair from Bash at the Beach 1994.
All right, so this is a good one, and Will, if you don't mind, because I'm going to give you plenty of time to talk about your Jerry Lawler-Kurt Hennig match, but because I just watched it for the first time last night, I want to give you some thoughts, and then I don't want you to sully my mindset because I just watched it, and then you give me all your thoughts on why you picked that match and why you love it so much, okay? Do it that way?
Sure. Okay. Sure.
So I watched it last night, and I really loved it. I love the atmosphere in Memphis. It was tremendous. I love the selling by both men, the strikes by both men. We've always talked about, you know, I know you've talked heavily about Jerry Lawler's punches were just completely on point in this match. Fantastic throughout, some great brawling, a lot of good back and forth, great blood from Jerry Lawler when he got busted open by the ring post, some really good near falls, and like I said, the atmosphere in the arena was just through the roof, on point commentary, just a tremendous overall package for the AWA title. My one nitpick, and it has nothing to do with him, but Jackie Fargo as the ref was fine most of the time. I just hated his real strict adherence to like the rules you never see, like when he wouldn't count because Hennig pulled the hair like 30 seconds before he went for the cover. Like that just took me out of it a little bit, and it left me leaving the match. And maybe this was the intent. I mean, you know more about the stretch than I do. It felt like Hennig had a bitch about why he should have won the match. Like, I feel like he got hosed a couple times. And then Lawler gets it slingshotted to the post, the Hennig special, and wins the match. And had a great pile driver in there too by Lawler, by the way. But those are my overall general thoughts. And again, I wouldn't like ding the match because of it, but that one, it was back-to-back. He wouldn't do it because I forget what the first one was. The second was the punch. Hennig punched him. When the whole match was filled with punches. And then he wouldn't count on a Hennig punch, and then he wouldn't count on the hair pull. So that was the only thing that kind of took me out a little bit, but I loved it. I really enjoyed watching it for the first time.
Well, good, man. I mean, I can see that. The only thing I would argue is that Jackie Fargo is a Memphis legend. He is Mr. Memphis before Jerry Lawler was Mr. Memphis.
Right.
And so having him there was there to add to the gravitas. But I absolutely agree. Whether it's the, who is it, Gene Kaniski, who was the ref who ruined Ray's Flair. You know, we see the Luthez matches where everybody wants to wrestle on the mat to try and impress Luthez when he's a guest ref. So I can see that. Or Michael Hayes and David Manning ruining the Flair-Kerry Cage match from World Class in 82. So I don't really have a beef with that. But for someone who's a huge Jerry Lawler fan, to me, this is the culmination of Jerry Lawler finally winning his world title when he had been so close with Bockwinkel, been so close with Briscoe, been so close with Flair, at different points. Had a 60-minute draw with Harley Race when he was a world champion. And so this is like for people who are invested in Memphis wrestling, this was the payoff. And to have Mr. Memphis legend Fargo count the three kind of added to the ambiance of the whole thing.
Yeah. And I definitely appreciate that and the gravitas and the importance of having Fargo there. And again, he didn't bother me too much. Just those two spots that really kind of bugged me. And like I said, maybe it was set up to give Hennig a reason to complain on his local TV. I don't know. But I mean, that's how it felt to me. Like they were setting him up to say,
sure,
look, I had him beat twice, you know.
They did that a lot in the 80s.
Right,
you know,
right.
You got to protect the guy that's putting you over.
Right. So, but other than that, loved it. It's up against Hogan Flair from Bash of the Beach, which to me, you know, the match that we had been waiting decades for, you know, or whatever, at least a decade and a half for, that we did not get in the WWF when they both were there. So WCW pounced, immediately had signed Hulk Hogan and put this match on pay-per-view, did a monster number. Meant a lot to WCW business-wise. You know, you can argue whether they should have turned Flair heel so quickly. You can argue, and we did on those 94 WCW shows, so we don't have to dive too much into it again. But should they have turned him heel? Should they have had Hogan win the first time? You know, we've covered all those points. But the match itself is, you know, a little bit unheralded, maybe a little underrated. I thought it was really well worked when you consider, you know, who was involved.
I wouldn't argue with you there, because I loved the match too. Remember when we did the shows with Scott and Charles?
Yep. So. You know, having just watched Lawler Hennig's a little fresher in my mind, I don't know. They're close for different reasons. Like, Hogan was such a big moment, him jumping ship, winning the WCW title, but I feel like we have a couple bigger Hogan-related moments coming up. You know, I could give it to Lawler Hennig here. I think overall package, you get a little bit more sucked in.
Yeah, you're never going to get me to go against the Lawler match unless you really make a compelling argument. And as much as I like Hogan Flair, it ushered in a really, really ugly era in WCW. You know, and that's kind of what really sticks in my craw there, is you have Hogan coming in. He brings in guys like the Renegade so he can, quote unquote, get his win back against the Warrior. You know, try and build that up. Brings in the Honky Tonk Man. Brings in Jim Duggan, who I love. But, you know, putting Jim Duggan over guys like Steve Austin. Just
right.
Hogan and WCW, this was a dream match. I can't deny it. But it had been done around the horn in WWF in 92, right? When Flair came to WWF.
Yeah, they did a round of house show matches.
And, you know, and like I said, it did really, really leave a stink on the company because of Hogan's influence. And we saw that. We saw the quality of the shows just go right off a cliff shortly after this.
Yeah, I mean, popped a big number, and then quality downhill, and eventually they obviously turned it around. But why don't we move on, since we're in agreement?
Yeah, we got to move on.
All right, so Lawler Hennig advances to round two. Dan, what do we got for match number two?
Match number two features Rock versus Mankind from Raw in January 1999, and that is going up against Brock and Cena from SummerSlam 2014.
All right, so no surprise here that I nominated Fully Rock. I was there live. One of my favorite wrestling moments of all time. You talk about a culmination of a story, the Mick Foley Mankind story from his debut in the WWF all the way through that win was such this underdog story, especially when they started to build when, you know, he was McMahon's puppet, his dude Love, and then he gets thrown off the cell and he starts to kind of go a little crazy, and then Vince uses him as a pawn. And you never think he's going to win the big one. You never think he's a guy that would ever put the title on. You're setting up Rock for Austin and Mania, and then you come into this night on a taped Raw, and it was a treat being there live, a treat for the fans. You get the awesome Austin interference. Back-to-back just goosebump-inducing moments when Austin's glass breaks, and then when Foley gets the three count. I'll put the last, 3 minutes of that match up against, the final 3 minutes of any match, just with DX and Corporation brawling and the crowd just going nuts.
I'm going to say this. I'm not a fan of the Attitude Era. Yeah. I don't think it holds up well. I think now I will never be one to take away your memories, you know, and I have memories from that era too, but I don't get excited over that stuff. But I will say this, it was very important on the other channel on Nitro. That's where you had the Goldberg saga and then eventually the Finger Poke of Doom, where Kevin Nash basically hands the belt over to Hulk Hogan, which is a match we did not, you know, by the way, put on this show, you know. But I want to talk about the other match, which was more recent. That's Brock Lesnar versus John Cena, which as a match, it's not really a match. It's a squash. And it's seeing John Cena, the face of a company for 10 years, getting destroyed by the beast, Brock Lesnar. And so I remember that Rock Mankind match, man, and just being so shocked because I never looked at Mick Foley as like a world title competitor. You know, I mean, not bad for a guy to do a run here or there, but I never looked at him as a world champion.
Yep.
But immediately after he becomes world champion, it automatically felt like a guy who didn't really ever have that kind of credibility to be a guy, a world champion, automatically gets that credibility. So I give him all the props in the world for that. So which one would you pick?
I'd go with that one. And if you asked me a year ago, I might have said Cena Brock because it felt so heavy and so monumental at the time. And I still stand by that. It was the absolute right move. It was a spectacle. It was awesome to witness. I think the way they've handled the year since took some of the steam off of that. Like, yeah. Brock's title reign didn't really go that great. Cena didn't really suffer. You know, if that, like, ended Cena's career or something,
you'd be talking differently. You know, the sad thing is that if Brock Lesnar had his contract that he has now, where he's working more house shows, where he's doing his network specials, working more pay-per-views, I would say, you know, maybe the Brock one. But since Brock only defended the title, like, twice, you know, and then, you know, dropped it at Mania to Rollins, you know, and a weird fashion and the Money in the Bank cash in. I think I'd agree with you. Rock versus Mankind, a much bigger moment, even though it was on Raw and, you know, much more impactful. And from a match quality standpoint, neither one of these matches is going to win match of the year anyway. So no problem giving it to Rock Mankind.
Right. And Brock never even really putting anyone over for the title. Rollins ended up pinning Reigns. And it, you know what
that,
I mean?
That doesn't bother me because I don't think Brock should ever be pinned.
Neither. But if you're saying, if you're trying to talk about the importance of the change, like to me, they set Brock up to be champion to eventually transition that to someone else. And they never did
that. Now, I will say that the fact that Mankind didn't hold the belt for very long also kind of hurts him because it was a moment, a great moment at that moment, but had absolutely no lasting impact.
It did make him a megastar for that run, though, something you never would have. Like, that win. I mean, he was kind of climbing anyway, but that win solidified him.
Let's debate that the next round. Let's get through this, but I do want to respond to that later, and you'll understand why. Okay,
right, sounds good.
What's next, Dan?
Fascinating pairing here. It's Jay Briscoe and Kevin Steen from Supercard of Honor 2013 taking on Ric Flair versus Rugged Ronnie Garvin from Starrcade 1987.
All right, I think we're going to probably agree on this one. And I put Steen Briscoe on the list just to add a little variance to it. And it's a match I saw live WrestleMania 29 weekend. And it really, the reason I put it on was mainly because the finish surprised me because I was just getting into ROH. I know Steen had the long run with Scum. And in my mind, Jay Briscoe, as an outsider, was this a tag guy, and I thought they were giving him a title shot as kind of a stalwart, a thank you, and I thought he'd lose a tough match. And when he won, I was shocked. And then, of course, kicked off a hell of a run for Briscoe over the next few years. And I really, the match was good, and the crowd was nuts, and I enjoyed the atmosphere. But I would probably go Garvin Flair just from my knowledge of both matches.
Yeah, well, let me talk about Garvin Flair. Yeah. This may be Ric Flair's best in-ring feud of all time. And originally, I wanted to put Ronnie Garvin's title win in, but you know, for purposes of viewing, so that we both had a fair shot at looking at it, you know, we switched it to Starrcade. But this match, if you watch the edited version that's on the Turner Home Video, you don't really capture the entire match and how great it builds and how you can really see the crowd turn on Ronnie Garvin and Ric Flair. And that's the tragedy of it all, is that Ric Flair should have been a babyface. You know, not necessarily saying Ronnie Garvin should have been a heel, but by this time, people loved Ric Flair. Ric Flair was so enamored with this idea that he was a heel, and Dusty Rhodes was so enamored with the idea that he was the number one babyface, that they really didn't put themselves in the right roles for the right time. And when WWF went national, WWF's always been a babyface territory, and Crockett was still stuck with that old NWA mentality. It's one of my talking points. I'll say it until I'm blue in the face. I think the fact that they never truly made a babyface the number one guy in that company is why Crockett folded and had to sell to Turner. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But in terms of in the ring, Jay Briscoe and Kevin Steen, I appreciate Kevin Owens a lot more than I did Steen. I thought Steen did a lot of wasteful movements. I thought he did what we call finisher overkill. Jay Briscoe, I think, is so great. Such a charismatic character. Saw him recently at ROH. But he does a lot of tendencies like that, too, where he just kind of goes into overkill mode or doesn't always, like, kind of create a story when a story can be created. But, you know, this was a good title change. enough to warrant like match of the year consideration. That well, probably wasn't the match of the year, but match of the year consideration. But if you're going to ask me to pick ROH or classic NWA title match, I'm going to go NWA title match.
Well, we're going to blame the committee that seated these for that one. But yeah, we'll go Flair Garvin here. Obviously, much more impact.
Well, hey, I mean that's why it's random, right? You know, I mean, look at the Spurs last year. Got the Clippers, right? Like,
well, that's not random.
Just the way it rolled. No, but it was just the way it rolled, you know, because of the rules that were in place. True. So
random's more like the BS selection committee in NCAA that does their S9 season. Yeah. But I won't get there. All right, Dan, what's next?
Maybe we'll do better this time. It's Stone Cold Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 14 taking on Sting and Vader from Great American Bash 92.
All right. So I wanted to put an Austin match on here. And I figured we needed a Michaels match. And this is one maybe that doesn't always come up like top of mind. And I put it because it was such an important match to the future of the WWF at that time. They needed to finally get the belt on Austin and just let him be the man. You know, many thought it would be Bret Hart in that role. And he left. Obviously, Shawn got the belt and was going to be the man to transition. And it ended up being very much old guard versus new guard. At the time, you didn't really feel that way because you didn't think Shawn was going away. But he'd end up not wrestling again for over 4 years. So as a match, very, very good, especially when you consider the injury to Michaels at the time. He had Mike Tyson's involvement, which is a big part of keying the WWF's resurgence at that period as well. So I think one of the biggest matches in WWF history, so I think it definitely earns consideration.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue. It was one of my favorite moments when it happened. But to me, Sting Vader is on a different level. And this is WCW at like a low point in terms of drawing money. I mean, they weren't drawing a lot of money in 92, man, you know, 93. But Sting Vader, it really announced to the world that Vader was the beast that was going to kind of take over the wrestling world. Just a mauling by Vader. And Sting, to his credit, I don't think Sting has ever had a better rival than Vader. I think these two were made for each other because Sting wasn't afraid to kind of lay it into Vader because that's kind of what Vader expects, you know, because Vader's not going to show you any mercy. And I think these two just naturally fit together. And the problem with Austin Michaels is Michaels leaving and kind of like disappearing in the shadows for a few years, I think hurts the Austin win in the sense that the guy never got a rematch and it never kind of like confirmed, hey, Austin's the man. He's going to be Michaels over and over again, you know?
Yeah,
and
I plus, don't think like, they needed that at the time, though.
No, but at the same time, they were doing that. They were doing the Russo booking at the time, like where eventually, you know, everybody and their mother gets a title shot, and they did wacky things like hold the title up, and Kane gets the title for a day or two, and the first blood angles, and you know. Yes, in terms of money and drawing and all that, I can't dispute that. But as in terms of a match, I'm going to pick Sting Vader.
I love Sting Vader. This is the first one I'm going to call on Dan for, though. I think the fact that this is Austin's crowning moment and with Tyson in the mix, and basically you can point to this match as one of the key cogs in turning around the WWE from a more
I can't dispute any of that, so, but it's the Attitude Era for me.
I know. So, Dan, which one are you moving on here?
I'm moving on Austin Michaels for the reasons you just said, and just, you know, kickstarting one of the most profitable times in the business. Whether Will likes it or not, it was huge for the WWE.
Tough draw to Sting Vader. Yeah. I think that would have beaten a lot of other matches on this, but let's keep motoring through here.
Poor Vader.
All right. Next up, the Battle of 1984. It's Kerry Von Erich and Ric Flair versus Hulk Hogan and the Iron Sheik.
All right, so another match I just watched for the first time, Will, yesterday you had sent me over the link, the match in Japan in May of 84 when Flair regained the NWA title from Kerry Von Erich. Again, another match I loved watching for the first time. Kerry, definitely easily the best Von Erich match I've ever seen of Kerry Von Erich. He was just on point. His selling was tremendous. His presence was great. He felt like a big star coming out to Eye of the Tiger and then you know, really going toe-to-toe with Flair. And I didn't know. I mean, obviously, the commentary is in Japanese, and I went in completely blank. So I was watching this on the treadmill at the gym. So I'm trying to focus with the Japanese commentary, and I had no idea it was 2 out of 3 falls. So when Von Erich won with the claw to the first fall, I was like, whoa, what the fuck? Oh, damn it. I was like, whoa, what the hell? What's going on? And then, of course, I pieced it together that it was going to be best of three. So I like that they each won with their finisher. Yeah, that gap closed quickly with the F-bombs. I like that they both won one round with the finisher. I loved Von Erich's selling of the knee after the figure four when he was limping coming out of the corner, and how that played into the end of the match as well. And that was really well worked. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for choosing it.
No, I'm glad you did. And you know, one of my contentions for over a decade is that Kerry Von Erich was a much better wrestler than he's ever been given credit for. Oh, you know, a lot of people like to equate him to the British Bulldog. Oh, Kerry was good when he could be carried. No, Kerry was the best Von Erich brother by a mile. And, you know, when you consider the backstory, this is kind of a tragic match in one sense, in that Kerry finally wins the title at the Parade of Champions or whatever that open air arena deal was that drew like 40,000 people. He wins the world title kind of for his brother David, who'd passed away earlier in the year. And Kerry Von Erich was so charismatic. I mean, I lived through it, man. Here in Texas, Von Erich mania, just seeing their faces on commercials and, you know, on like merchandise and watching the TV, which, you know, was almost the state of the art as anything WWF was doing. And now Hogan versus Sheik, if we're going to compare which moment's more iconic, man, I can't argue with Hogan versus Sheik, you know. However, match quality, it's not even close. Like, at least with Austin Michaels, you could say they had a good match. This was basically
a squash.
And Iron Sheik was a really good wrestler at this time, as he would show with Sergeant Slaughter later in the year in their boot camp match. And Hogan was a pretty good wrestler at the time, too. But this was really just the way to kickstart Hulkamania. And as much as it means, you know, recently with the diminishing of Hulk Hogan's reputation and whatnot, I have no problem leaving a Hulk match off and giving it to Kerry Flair, only because it is a great match. It solidifies Kerry as a great wrestler. There's also a match from Japan, Kerry Von Erich versus Jumbo Tsuruta, which I think if you enjoyed this one, JR, you'd really enjoy that. Maybe that's another match we can watch on a live watch later on down the line.
Okay, and I agree with you. Like you said, Austin Michaels is at least a really good match. Hogan Sheik is a squash on a, you know, in a many ways, throwaway house show. So I'll go just the atmosphere in the moment and the quality of Flair Von Erich. I'll move that on. All right, Dan, we got three more first round matches, so we gotta hustle here.
All right, we got Diesel and Bret Hart from Survivor Series 95 taking on Goldberg and Hulk Hogan again from Atlanta in 1998 on Nitro.
All right, I love Bret and Diesel. Great brawl, great match, but no contest from me here. Goldberg, Hogan. Will?
Yeah, this was one of the most special moments. I mean, I was marking out like a little kid, man, and I was in my mid-20s at the time. I thought that for as many mistakes as WCW made, like never putting this, you know, program on pay-per-view, this really felt like a special moment. And remember, Goldberg had to go through Scott Hall earlier in the night just to get to Hogan. And if there's ever a time that a company dropped the ball, it was with Goldberg. I mean, they should have just had him mow through the entire company until the day he stopped selling a ticket. And the moment he lost the belt, he lost that aura, you know. I mean, he still had it, but
not the same.
It wasn't the same. They went from a company that made tons of money, largely on the back of Goldberg, even when the booking would betray the wrestlers, to a company that, you know, was out of business 2 years later. But I have nothing to say about Bret versus Diesel, except it was a good match. But, man, Kevin Nash is still Kevin Nash in my eyes.
Yeah, no, Goldberg, Hogan's name. So we'll talk more about Goldberg later, too. We have a cool little piece on PlayStation.com that's going to be ongoing. So, all right, Dan, two more to go.
Steamboat Flair, Chi-Town, 1989, taking on Punk and Cena from Money in the Bank.
Oof. Oh, Dan McGinn, what are you doing to me?
All right, Will, man. Go ahead, try.
This is hard, man. I have very strong emotions for both matches. We're talking Ricky Steamboat's first, you know, world title win against Flair in one of the most legendary feuds of all time, in ring wise, just amazing, versus Punk versus Cena, which, you know, I lived through that. I was there. The uncertainty with Punk, the atmosphere. Match was not as good as Flair Steamboat, But I'm going to say it was the more important match only because, you know, Steamboat in the NWA would have the great 2 out of 3 false clash match and then lose it back to Flair at Wrestle War. And then he was gone by the end of the year to, you know. And so, whereas Punk, Cena, a lot of the things we're seeing in WWE now are almost a result of the things that Punk was complaining about. Now, Punk will never receive credit for it, but a lot of the stuff we're seeing with guys like Owens and those guys even being hired and brought up to the roster and Cesaro, a lot of that was a Punk rallying to get people to work with, people who could go. And, you know, I really do wish that this was a different matchup, but I think Punk Cena is the more important match, and they're both – I mean, Flair Steamboat, man, that's a near 5-star match, man. This is hard, man. I'm going to go Punk Cena.
Yeah, I'm going to go Punk Cena too. And I think the trilogy in a way maybe hurts Flair Steamboat a bit, that we knew we got it 2 more times. And you know, historically, one of the best matches ever. But historically, not really all super significant, like you said.
Did not do good business because George Scott promoted it horribly.
And Punk Cena reignited the WWE's business. So, I think that's the call there. All right, Dan, one more first rounder.
We got Brock and Eddie from No Way Out 04 versus Rock Jericho No Mercy 01.
It's another hard one for me here.
Very similar matches.
Very hard for me. Yeah. To me, I like Jericho's world title win, especially being an ex-WCW guy. I think it's probably one of his top 5 matches ever. I love the interplay in the match, the chair playing into it. Eddie versus Brock was a great match, not a match of the year contender, but such a special moment because as internet wrestling nerds, Eddie was one of our guys.
Yep.
You know, Jericho was – I was a fan of Jericho, but he really wasn't like an internet wrestling nerd guy. I don't know. I never – even though he was Eddie's friend, I never put him in that class with like –
It was a breaking the glass ceiling moment for both guys.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And Eddie Guerrero and neither guy was really a success as champion, right? Like, it's not like Jericho picked up business and Eddie – kind of faltered under the bright lights, you know, got real stressed out, you know. I'm going to have to give it to Eddie Brock just for the fact that Eddie's more my guy than Jericho is. That's that simple.
Yeah. And you wanted to, I mean, we've talked a lot about how rematches or the way things went afterwards affect, you know, the look and Rock and Jericho would have a bunch more matches after. And you could argue, maybe even the Raw one. I know people have said that they prefer. And then they went on to have 2 more. And Jericho didn't really... I mean, it was big for him, obviously, being Austin and Rock on the same night. But then when you look kind of where he went after, it made him. But he didn't hit that upper echelon of, like, bankable star until his second run in 08. And this isn't to diminish what he did, because this still, you know, is easily qualifying or easily qualifies for a list like this. But I think Eddie Brock was a combination of 2 things. It was the culmination of a, you know, fantastic story, Eddie's redemption story from, you know, his alcoholism and his demons that came into play. And then he comes to the top and they told that through the DVD and the book, and Brock had been nearly unbeatable. And then Eddie takes him out with a great Goldberg moment heading into 20. And, you know, it was a redemption story. And for a while it looked like they made bank on Eddie, but like you said, it really ended up being, too much for him to handle. But I would go with Eddie Brock too, just for the moment, the tears, the crowd in San Francisco when he's celebrating out there was just fantastic.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, so now we're down to the grade 8.
And what we'll do, I think, is we're going to say that for the next episode, Will, because we are closing in on time here. I don't want to have to rush through it. So I think we'll do.
No way.
Yeah. What do we got for time, Dan? Dan, you with us? I don't know. Dan left. I know we're close to up on time, so
you have two minutes, guys. Two minutes.
So I say we wrap the first round here, Will, and then we come back. So what is your of the remaining match? Or Dan, why don't you take a second, read us the matches that we're going to pick up with next episode.
Next round will consist of the following matches: we have Lawler and Hennig from earlier, versus Rock and Mankind from Raw 1999. We have Ric Flair and Ron Garvin from 87 taking on Austin and Michaels from WrestleMania 14. Kerry Von Erich and Ric Flair tangle in 1984 taking on Goldberg and Hogan from 1998. And then finally it'll be Punk and Cena for Money in the Bank taking on Brock and Eddie from No Way Out 2004.
Okay, man, so
that Lawler versus Rock Mankind, that's going to be a bloodbath. You and I are going to claw each other's eyes out.
Yeah, certainly are. That one's going to take some time to get through. So probably for the best that we see.
And then choosing between Punk Cena versus Eddie Lesnar, that's like asking me to choose my. It's like Sophie's Choice. God,
some really tough matchups. So that was good. Yeah. I think we had some good debate. I think I don't think there's any real big upset in there, but we'll see. Obviously, some of these great matches are going to have to go. And next episode,
Flair Steamboat's close, man. That's painful.
Yeah, that one and Sting Vader. I think if they had different matchups, you may have seen them advance. They just kind of ran into two tough matchups. And even, you know, Hogan Sheik, like we talked about, such a monumental moment, but again, just a squash on a house show. So it's hard to really move it along some of these other ones. So like I said, we'll be back in episode 11 and we'll go through, I'm guessing we can probably get through the rest of this, but, you know, join us on either Facebook or Twitter or PWOWrestlingOnly.com and share your thoughts on who should have advanced and who would have advanced going forward before we get to that in the next episode. So, how are we on time, Dan?
And your time is up.
All right, first round is in the books there. So next episode, we'll finish the Game of Thrones tournament to determine the greatest world title challenge or change match from this set of 16. And why don't we go ahead and take a break, boys? We'll be back with challenge number 2.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We featured the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., The Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is a home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keith's RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net. All right, Place to Be Nation, we are back. One challenge is in the books, and we are on to the next one, as Jay-Z once said. And we've done this one before, way back at episode 2. Thought it was time to dig it out again. At least that's what the note from our producer, Dan McGinn, said when he passed it over to me. So, Dan, why don't you tell the world the game for us?
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology.
Your second game is called This Week in Wrestling History. We're looking at weeks September 27th through October 3rd. And if you guys need me, I'll be hatching some dragon eggs over here.
Okay. we thank, of course, Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, as we did last time when we went through this. And we'll let Will kind of take us through the history books as we go through that week that Dan mentioned, the dates September 27th to October 3rd, just looking at various cool little notes and matches and events that may have happened during that time frame. We'll talk about them. We'll see where the tangents take us. And then before you know it, Ric Flair will woo, and we'll wrap things up for the segment. So why don't we start at the top, Will, and why don't you take us through a couple of the real highlights that you happen to catch when you were
Well, the first thing I want to go through is some birthday celebrations. As you mentioned, I'm going to have a birthday this week, and I had no idea until doing research for this show that my main man, El Dandy, shares my birthday. So happy birthday, El Dandy.
There you go.
He was born October 1st, 1962. And, JR, I've said over and over again, man, El Dandy is one of those great wrestlers that may or may not be known for that little quip from Bret Hart, who are you to doubt El Dandy? Well,
right.
Well, nobody should doubt El Dandy because he's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, really. And also the winner of the Lou Ferrigno lookalike contest, according to Chris Jericho. But I am so proud to have my birthday shared with my man El Dandy, that's for sure. But other birthdays this week include Tajiri, who was born in 1970 on September 29th, Curtis Axel on September 30th, 1979, the late great Paul Bosch, a Houston promoter whose stuff you can see on NWA Classics. He was born on October 2nd, 1912, Yokozuna, October 2nd, 1966. And Bob Armstrong, October 3rd, 1939.
A decent little list there. Got some quality guys. Tajiri, like you said, El Dandy, and then Curtis Axel. But, some names.
Yokozuna, man. Yokozuna was a really great wrestler before he got too big.
Obscenely big.
And had really, really good matches, entertaining matches in Japan when he started out. And did pretty good in the WWF. I think if it was a better era of wrestling, or Vince McMahon wasn't in his like monster phase where he hired a bunch of 6 foot 8 lugs, I think Yokozuna would have really surprised people, kind of the way Rikishi surprised people. But I think Rikishi worked in an era where he had more people to go with,
and Yoko so. Has some some big matches like that. Smashes with Brett were pretty good, especially the one in the cage that was on the Coliseum video.
Absolutely.
It was a great match. And even his match with Luger at SummerSlam 93 was pretty good, too. And I believe Yoko also died in October. I don't think it was this week, obviously, but he died at some point later in the month, I think, in 2000, I believe. But definitely. Great memory.
And then I already mentioned Paul Bosch and how you can see Houston wrestling on NWA Classics. Tajiri. I'm just going to mention this real quick. Tajiri was one of the greatest wrestlers in the world in 1999 in ECW. Really helped carry that promotion after losing so many important names. Mm-hmm. And so I really want to give Tajiri props as well.
And had a really fun run as well in the WWF. With all the stuff with Regal was really funny.
Yeah.
And then once he got to kind of open things up and wrestle a little bit more instead of just kind of being a comedic player. He was really good too in the early days of the cruiserweight division. So definitely a guy that deserves the props. And as Dan said, Yokozuna died October 23rd, 2000.
Right. Well, let's move on, JR. Let's go to some title changes that happened during this week. And I want to comment on one title change, which I didn't see at the time. It's something that you read about in the PWI mags, the after mags, and you were shocked by this result. And it's shocking because it was the Road Warriors losing the AWA tag titles to Jimmy Garvin and Mr. Electricity, Steve Regal. Not the great wrestler, Lord Steven Regal, but one of the worst, most boring wrestlers to ever step on the face of the earth.
Yes.
Mr. Electricity, who I think they even had those AWA dolls made of these two. The little He-Man dolls where they stuck wrestling heads on He-Man figures, and they lost the AWA tag title in the 80s. Is there any chance in hell that you would ever have the Road Warriors lose to Jimmy Garvin and Steve?
No, definitely not. I remember Steve Regal from I have the set of videotapes. I believe it's mainly Memphis matches. I don't know if you've ever seen these. So I bought them like a job lot in the early 90s, but they were from the 80s and they had a bunch of random matches and they had like, illustrated pictures of the wrestlers on the front. It was like a set of five or six tapes. One was Andre the Giant. One was Tag Team Mayhem, Macho Man. Did you ever see those tapes?
I may have. Okay. I'm not, I've seen so much wrestling.
But anyway, I'm pretty sure Steve Regal was on one of those, and I was very confused watching it as a kid because I already knew of Lord Steven Regal. But anyway.
Just the tragedy having the Road Warriors lose to those guys. But, you know, whatever. Another title change that happened this week was, and this is something I think you can talk about just because I don't remember it, would be John Cena winning the U.S. title at No Mercy on October 3rd, 2004. What happened here?
U.S. title on October, that was the best of five series of Booker T.
I don't remember
for the title. So they started, I believe the first match was at SummerSlam, and they were trying to recreate a little bit of the magic of Benoit Booker from WCW, but they weren't nearly as good. Booker was in a weird stretch at that time in 04, working as a heel, but had got really bland, and he didn't really bring the best of Cena out during those matches, and Cena was still figuring things out too. So it was a cool idea. They were trying to legitimize Cena, and it was entertaining enough. None of the matches really stood out, and I remember, and we just covered No Mercy 04 on our Vintage Vault podcast.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to throw it to you, because this is kind of one of the time periods where my interest in WWE was at its lowest. They had already given up on Benoit and Eddie as champions. They transitioned to Randy Orton. This was during the was this during Evolution?
Yes. Yep.
It was, right?
Orton had just turned.
I hate that period. I hate that period. You know, I hated Evolution. JBL, I love his matches with Eddie, and I grew to like him as a wrestler over time. Did not like his stuff that he was doing here. Just, I was done with WWE at the time. But thankfully, I'd started to discover tape trading and getting to collect a lot of the older wrestling now that I talk about so often on these shows. So let's move on. Another thing that happened here on this week, and let's stick with Booker T. Booker T wins the WCW world title over Jeff Jarrett. I think this was on October 2nd, 2004.
So is that Nitro?
Yeah, this is Nitro, right. in a 49ers match.
Oh, yes.
And okay. So this is like, I don't know if Russo was booking, but
Late 2000, I think he was still around, I believe.
Right, maybe somewhere lurking in the shadows, making everybody's life miserable. But what a low point in WCW's history. And I really felt bad for Booker T. And as we've seen with Jeff Jarrett, this guy just can't get out of the way. I mean, his sense of self-importance has ruined, to me, it ruined TNA in the early years. Not saying TNA isn't a damaged company anyway, but absolutely made it unwatchable for me in the early years. And then bringing Russo along, it made WCW unwatchable when he came back and like tried to revive the NWO and was smashing people over with those stupid guitars every single week. I thought that his stuff in the WWF, like, you know, abusing women, I thought that was garbage. Just, I love Jeff Jarrett in Memphis when he was a young gun wrestling with Lawler and against the Moondogs. But man, I could do away with this. If I never saw another Jeff Jarrett match, I wouldn't be disappointed.
And that match was in San Francisco for the Nitro. That's why they did the San Francisco 49ers match. Booker defeated Jarrett and earned the title was actually vacated. And I believe that was, so Goldberg had turned, was it like New Blood Rising or whatever? So, and I know Russo was around for that. That would have been a few months before this. I can't remember. Oh, yeah. Never mind. Russo wrestled the week before on Nitro. Vince Russo and Booker T defeated. I'm sorry. No, Russo defeated Booker T in a cage match to win the title. And then they vacated.
Oh, God. Just garbage. Pure garbage.
And that's an interesting night. You know why I think they did something like that? That night, September 25th, 2000, just a couple days before our week here, was the first Raw on TNN. And WWF went all out. They had the ladder match with Edge and Christian versus the Hardys.
Still remember it to this day.
Yeah, so they made that a big show, and this Nitro was counter to that. in Uniondale. So I think that's why they tried to do something a little bit shocking, which is doesn't excuse them by having Vince Russo win the world title over the, you know, it's one thing too if he had beaten like maybe like an aging guy or something, but I mean Booker was the guy they were building up to be like their top face, you know, like their main guy, and they had Vince Russo beat him on Nitro.
20 minutes, guys, 20 minutes.
You know, well, let's go. Let's just we'll list some of the title changes, but I only want to talk about a couple more. And this week in 1987, on September 29th, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard win the NWA tag title over the Rock and Roll Express. Now, I know this is before your time, JR, but at this time, the Rock and Roll Express, you know, they had lost a little bit of their luster. You know, younger acts like the Rockers were coming along, right? Just a little bit more modern. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still wrestling, so everybody's a little bit behind the times. But Arn and Tully, as part of the Horsemen crew, just really kickstarted like that great like 2-year run as one of like the best tag teams of all time. And so, what are your takes on the Brainbusters? We'll just call them the Brainbusters just to make it easy, and the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love the Brainbusters, especially again my first time getting to know them and see them was when they were in WWF, but I've gone back and rewatched. And 87, obviously, would you call that, I mean, like peak Horseman year as far as the angle
86
goes?
And 87, right. Yeah.
So as far as the angle goes and the talent and everything else, I mean, that's their peak. So makes sense to get the belts on them and have the gold fully. And that was that towards the end for the Express, too? They were about done after that, right?
They were about done.
88 a little bit, but.
They were about done in Crockett, yeah. I think by the end of the year, they were gone. Then the Fantastics came in.
Right.
You know, because, you know, the Fantastics would usually follow the R&R as, like, the hot babyface tag team. And then they had that really hot run with the Midnight Express in 88. So, yeah, the Rock and Roll Express were on their way down. And, you know, it was just a different time, man. I mean, since you were on national TV, image was more important than ever. And they just kind of seemed behind the times. And at some point in time, you know, someone like Ricky Morton, who was such a young white meat babyface, you just start getting a little older, and it just makes it a little bit harder for young right. girls to cheer for you. You know, happens to the best of all the teenage heartthrobs, right? It just mm-hmm. it just happens. You know, age catches up with you. But you know,
yeah, look at Brutus Beefcake. Remember, he was the booty man. He was this heartthrob. Kimberly was all over him, you know, wanted to sex him up, and then he.
Oh my god! Oh my god! No! 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 No!
That stuff is awful. But, I've been watching yeah. those nitros.
Now, for 96, here's
the Booty Man is brutal.
Now here's a title change I want to discuss real quick. Scott Steiner wins the WCW TV title at a worldwide taping on September 29th, 1992, over Ricky Steamboat. Now, Scott Steiner's a weird case because this is a guy who, you know, people always said, oh, they should have pushed him as a singles, and, you know, he was always loyal to his brother Rick. I don't know, man. What's your take on that? Do you think Scott Steiner should have been pushed more heavily as a singles guy earlier on in his career when he was kind of stuck in that Steiner stack team?
I think WCW absolutely should have done whatever it took to try and get him over. At a time, you know, you talked about it before, 92 was just, you know, dead zone for them as far as draws and big names. And Vader would be there to fight Sting, and Sting was still carrying things on his back. But I think if you could have slowly built Steiner up over the next year or so, they would have had a big, jacked-up, charismatic, top-level babyface that the fans were into that could go at that point still, was kind of an athletic freak. And I think it would have behooved them to keep a guy like that under contract. And, you know, I don't know if the rumors are true, keeping the Steiners together, but why not offer to have, you know, just wrestle more singles, and they could still be, you know, Rick can still accompany him and Scott can still accompany Rick, but they don't have to solely be a tag team. Let them be singles that work together and are, you know, have each other's back, but work as a singles act instead. But I do think they had a chance to make Scott Steiner a big deal, and I think WWF wanted to do the same thing, and then they balked and they wanted to work Japan still, so they let him go. But I'm pretty sure they had the same plans to make Steiner a singles guy in 94.
Okay, well, and some other title changes that happened during this week. Austin Idol beat Stan Hansen, of all people, to win the CWA International title in a bull rope match in Memphis on October 3rd, 1983. And Dirty White Boy Tony Anthony beat a very young Dustin Rhodes on October 2nd, 1989, to become the first CWA Southwestern champ. Hmm. And we don't need to talk about either of those. I just want to throw it out because you know I'm a Memphis guy, and anytime I get a chance to talk Memphis, I'm going to. But in ECW in 1993, they had a Bloodfest 1 and Bloodfest 2 on October 1st and 2nd. And on the 1st, Terry Funk wins the ECW TV title over Jimmy Snuka. And on the 2nd, Sabu beat Shane Douglas for the ECW world title. And ECW, quite simply, in 1993, not a good promotion.
Right.
I mean, they didn't hit their stride till maybe a year, year and a half later. You know, when Cactus Jack comes in 94, Shane Douglas throws down the NWA world title. Do you have any memories on early ECW?
Only what I've kind of rewatched now. We didn't get it where I was, or if we did, being 12, I didn't really have it on my radar. So I wasn't really fully introduced to ECW until they showed up on Raw. And then, again, I didn't really even get to see ECW until it was on TNN. And then going back later on and catching up and seeing some stuff. But so no like great memories or thoughts of those times. I know Terry Funk being involved with ECW and you know being at a championship level was big for them, especially when it came time for the first pay-per-view. So that's unique. And kind of those lost months of the early Eastern, you know, months or year when they had Tito Santana, Don Morocco, Snuka. Funny to think about when you and the template's there, right? Because they did use a lot of kind of washed up guys for years later. But it's funny to think of when you first think ECW, and then if you were to tell people the guys that were around in the early days, they'd probably be like, what? Don Morocco was it ECW?
Don Morocco, he sucks so bad.
I know, but no, that's fine because we don't like Stephen Graham. So if it's someone he likes, we're fine not liking them too. but okay. Anyway, that's my thoughts.
All right, so let's move on. And now this week did have some big shows. Okay, to be fair, one of the big shows that happened at Shea Stadium, the WWF Showdown at Shea on September 30th, 1972. The main event. We're not going to run down the whole card for this one.
Right.
The main event: Bruno Sammartino versus Pedro Morales. Any thoughts on Bruno and Pedro? Now, I have thoughts on Pedro, but I want to get your take first.
As a match, I mean, I honestly have not seen this one. So
I don't know even know if it's on video, to be honest with you.
So if it is, I haven't seen it. But a big deal, obviously. I mean, when I look at that on paper, listed out two of the biggest stars they had in the 70s and 80s going at it, of course it was cool. You know, that they were, obviously, I'm guessing they're both faces at the time, and you're putting them out there. What had Pedro won the title yet? Was this after he had been champion already?
I don't know. I'd have to ask Chris Elmer about that.
Okay, I can look it up quick.
I'm not, you know, I'm not a historian. I just pretend to be one. I have the worst memory on planet Earth. You know, it's pretty
Let's
sad.
See. When did he win the WWF title? He had it in.
It's around this era.
Yeah, I just don't know if it was before or after. I'll find it.
Okay, well, to me, Pedro Morales, while you're looking for that, is one of the great baby faces. Like, as a kid, you know, when I discovered WWF, he was already kind of a jobber, you know, just kind of a gateway guy for the other names to go over on TV.
Right.
But rewatching some of his stuff, like when he was Intercontinental Champion and before, my God, this guy had so much charisma. I'm trying to think of a guy who had so much charisma that the crowd cheers him no matter what he does. And he was great in the ring at, like, you know, striking and punching and selling. And so this is a guy that his stock with me has really risen over the years simply because he really played his part well. I never kind of got why he was a champion or why people love Pedro, but watching old footage, you really get the sense this guy was just special.
And he
just
was actually,
had that special, like, shine on him.
And he was actually champion in this match. So
okay.
He won it on February 8th, 71 from Koloff and then lost it to Stasiak December 1st, 73. So almost a 2-year reign.
Yeah, and it
I'm sorry, almost a 3-year reign. Almost a 3-year reign. And then Bruno went back a week later. Yep.
Yeah, Pedro Morales is amazing. Another show that happened this week would be the AWA Super Clash 1 in 1985. And this is notable because it didn't only feature AWA talent, it also featured NWA talent.
Mm-hmm.
So you had.
Is this the one that was outside?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And some notable matches were Sergeant Slaughter beating Boris Zukov, which was a pretty good match. You had Jumbo, Baba, and Tenryu from Japan face Harley Race and the Irwin brothers. You had Sherry Martel winning the AWA women's title, pinning Candy Devine.
Was that a battle royal? Didn't she win it in the battle royal? Was that that one?
I don't know. I just know she won. I'm just looking at the results from ProWrestlingHistory.com.
10 minutes, guys.
One of my favorite things, a midget match between Little Tokyo and Little Mr. T. A good Kamala match, Jerry Blackwell versus Kamala in a body slam match. And check this out, Ric Flair versus Magnum T.A. JR, you might not know this, but at the time, they were actually taking that program, Magnum T.A. versus Ric Flair, around the country. So this is a match that obviously was featured in Crockett. It was featured in AWA, and they'd also done this match in Portland as well. So a big matchup for Crockett in 1985. And then you had the AWA World Champion fight Stan Hansen to a double countout, Rick Martel versus Stan Hansen.
Only
so,
2.5 minutes, though, that match. I remember being was on the old
24/7. It was more about the brawl overall than about the match, yeah.
And I remember this from 24/7. I had it. It's one of the first things I had on tape, so I've actually seen it a couple of times. This is one where the Freebirds, I believe, come out with the faces painted with the flags.
Absolutely is, yep.
Yeah. Okay, so, and then your boy Steve Regal opened it. But cool match here, too. Greg Gagne, Scott Hall, and Kurt Hennig teamed up against Stevens, Bockwinkel, and Zbysko. One of my favorite moments, though, is I think it was Larry Nelson who called the Oriental six-man tag champs. Oh, it's listed in Wikipedia as the Asian, but he always, the Oriental six-man tag champions, Jumbo Tsuruta, Jai Baba, and Tenryu. So that one always made me laugh. But yes, I actually know the show decently enough from having watched it on my 24/7 tapes.
And I just want to talk about this show that also happened in 1985 on September 30th, 1985. Check out this show from Memphis, all right, as part of the NWA's Great American Bash. So it's a Memphis NWA show. Check this out. We have some highlights include Coco Ware versus Dr. Tom Pritchard. He wasn't Dr. Tom yet, but he was still Tom Pritchard. We have the Sheep Herders versus Bill Dundee and Jimmy Valiant. Tully Blanchard and Magnum T.A., Pistol Pez Whatley and Buddy Landell, the Fabulous Ones versus the Fabulous Freebirds. That probably was a great match. The Rock and Roll Express versus Ivan and Nikita Koloff, and Ric Flair versus Jerry Lawler. If there's ever a golden grail or a holy grail of like wrestling footage that we just don't have, It's like all of that Mid-South Coliseum footage from over the years. Now, we have a ton of it, but not nearly enough. Like what they're doing with the NWA Classics, I really wish we could have like a Memphis Classics wrestling channel where just all those Mid-South Coliseum matches were shown.
Yeah, that's definitely footage I would like to see, a lot of more Memphis stuff. That's one of my blind spots, and like I said, I'm sure as we continue to grow the show, we'll dive into some of that. But yeah, no, the card looks interesting, especially the half-hour Flair-Lawler match.
Now, let's go into a couple of TV moments here. Okay, one of the moments would be in 1991, September 28th, Ric Flair and Roddy Piper have a huge confrontation on Superstars. And this really kind of announced to the world that Ric Flair is no longer in the NWA. Now, Heenan had been teasing it for months, but this was like Piper, his good friend, coming out and, you know, and just Ric Flair beating the crap out of Piper.
Yeah, just mark out city for that moment. Piper on commentary with Vince, and Flair stops and goes up to the commentary booth. And if you remember during the fracas, Piper hit Vince with a chair and knocked him out, and that was like a big deal at the time that Vince took a shot like that. As they were going at it, Piper just kind of went crazy and smacked him. And that was building up Flair's first real feud in the WWF to go around the houses as he kind of got his name out there. But I really love that that whole scenario, that whole confrontation between the two. It was really well done and a big deal. I mean, you figured Flair was going for Hogan at some point, but having a pit stop with Piper was really neat. I always loved that moment.
I agree completely, man. Now, we talked about Double J, Jeff Jarrett earlier, and we don't need to talk about this at length or if at all. I just want to mention it. This was the week on Raw, September 30th, 1996, where Double J was exposed as a fraud. So he did not sing all those songs.
It was Jesse James, the real Double J.
It was Jesse James. And, you know, as he was exposed as a fraud as a main eventer, also a fraud as a singer. So I just wanted to mention that. Now, there were some big shows that happened in ECW in 2000, Anarchy Rules, October 1st, 2000. Jerry Lynn beats one of the worst ECW champions of all time, Justin Credible, for the world title. My buddy Rob Naylor will argue till he's blue in the face that Justin Credible was the right guy at the time. I think Justin Credible set ECW back. I think he hurt their image. I think that he really was not the right guy at the time at all. I think he was a horrible wrestler.
Yeah, you know, I get what Heyman was trying to do with him. I figure a couple of reasons. They probably figured he wasn't going to go anywhere for a while. And, you know, he at least had kind of the look and the attitude about it to kind of fit the ECW brand of what they were looking for. But in-ring-wise, yes, not very good. And I don't think the ECW fans – it's tough. I mean, Heyman got them to drink a lot of Kool-Aid and buy into a lot of, you know, interesting kind of crappy acts. But, you know, this one was one they never really fully bought into.
No, I agree. And a couple of other shows that happened this week. On October 2nd, 2004, ROH, which had been around for a couple of years by this time, had the Midnight Express reunion. So Cornette, Condrey, Eaton, and Stan Lane all reunited on this show, did a little angle in the ring, okay, earlier in the show. And the main event was a dream match at the time, Samoa Joe versus Bryan Danielson. And now a year later, speaking of dream matches, on October 1st, 2005, so bummed I couldn't be there for this one, Samoa Joe versus Kenta Kobashi in a Match of the Year classic.
Two great shows. In the middle of a red-hot streak from Ring of Honor when, you know, in many fans' eyes, they could do no wrong for a couple of years there, especially on top of just churning out dream match, like you said, after dream match. And you always wonder, you know, just some of these guys, and we talked about this with Sting on the Kevin Kelly show in a different way, but, you know, Joe, Danielson, you know, Danielson, these guys that were really big in that early 2000s that were kind of split, Daniels that were splitting time between TNA and ROH, you know, if they had...
3 minutes, guys, 3 minutes.
If WWE was set up then like it is now, how big some of those guys could have been in the matches we could have been having, right? Because a lot of them were hesitant to join because the indie, you could make some money on the indie shows. They were, you know, a big deal on tape traders and comps, and WDF or WWE wasn't known for pushing guys like that. If you had the indie stink on you, they don't want you. They wanted their own guys, and there was still a glut of, you know, veterans hanging around taking up the space. But if they were configured like they are now, and you think of some of these matches that they could have been having week in and week out. And you can say what you want about the quality of WWE television, and we do, and the storylines and the booking, but the in-ring action is arguably the best in company history from week to week. And think about if you had some of these guys doing that in their prime years versus all coming in towards the end of their runs, you know, and that goes for Sting too. Like if he had been around, he could have some really big matches in the 2000s, and he comes in now and almost dies having a match. Even Samoa Joe, I mean, looks like he's having a good time in NXT. It's cool that they're using him as much. But when you look at it, it's like, man, if they would have brought this guy in like 05, what could they have done with him?
Oh, no, no doubt, man. I mean, but you know, WWE at that time, I'd say 2005 to 2010, were kind of at their worst in terms of not really seeing the change. I think it took guys like Bryan and Punk to be as successful as they were to really get them to change that around. You know, so a lot of these guys that are succeeding today in the company that 10 years wouldn't have even gotten a sniff, they can thank guys like Bryan and Punk, right? I mean,
right.
I mean, the really, you know, are shifting it. And I wish that Samoa Joe would have had a chance because he was arguably the best worker in the world in 2004, 2005.
Do you think he should have came in if they were gonna, if the rumors are true and they wanted him to maybe originally be the Umaga gimmick? Because I think he could have A, made it work, and B, eventually, if he just
transitioned
stuck it out,
would have transitioned
out of it. I think that was his mistake not doing that at the time. But, you know, that was a sentiment at the time. Like, no one wanted these indie guys to go to WWE because they were afraid they would get ruined.
Well, you know, when TNA started doing Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle, everyone was like, "Oh, Joe made the right choice," right. And WWE is going to bury Punk, and then 5 years later, it's like Samoa Joe's a joke on TNA because TNA as an entire company is a joke, and Punk looked like a genius because he got himself over in the hardest place in the world to get over for a guy of his nature.
Yep,
you know,
and you wonder what Joe could have been. You wonder. I mean, I don't know if AJ Styles was ever big enough for Daniels, but I think Joe is to me really the what if, and even Brian, if he would have came in a little sooner,
right,
when he was healthier, if they, not that they would have used him right, but again, this is a hypothetical that they'd book guys like they do now. You just look at the wave of talent they missed out on by not adapting their criteria.
Right, right. Well, and one more thing I want to mention just before we end. In IWA Mid-South in September 27, 2000, Chris Hero and BJ Whitmer worked to a draw, and I am shocked that Chris Hero is a 15-year veteran, as is BJ Whitmer, only because I still think of them as the new guys, and it just reminds me of how old I am becoming.
And with that, time is up.
You are old, dirt, but you know what? We all are. So happy birthday to you, and you can celebrate by watching Chris Hero and BJ Whitmer. Reminds you of your youth. So that's it. This week in history in the books, another fun installment. Learned some cool stuff. Looked at some interesting cards. And we have one more challenge to go. We have some mail to go. So why don't we take a quick break, and when we return, we'll get into challenge number 3.
Watch pro wrestling. Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the pro wrestling only place to be nation podcast network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, Lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Good Will Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Alright, Placement Nation, we're back. Hope you enjoyed listening all about the PWO-PTBN podcast feed, and we'll talk about PlacementNation.com in a few moments here. But first, Dan McGinn, we have ourselves a third challenge. We've already did a tournament of wrestling title changes. We've already done This Week in History, looking back throughout wrestling's past from September 27 to October 3rd. And as always, is our customary third game. Mr. McGinn, what are we doing?
Every day.
Well, JT, Will, PTB, and PWO, we have our own network. Tonight, we're going to create a DAW network.
All right, so that is exactly how it sounds. Will and Dan and myself have unlimited resources. We are billionaires that have purchased every tape library in history, and we have access. We have a working relationship with Vince McMahon because we helped kind of float him back up, help him solidify his business, and he wants to get on our channel that has tons of advertising and funding. So we've reached a deal with Vince McMahon to use his footage and to use his stars in any shows that we want. We don't own them, but we do own all the other footage from all the other promotions around in history. So we purchased the whole library from Vince, and we're working with him currently. So that's where we're set up, Will. So we have access to anything you want access to, and we can use the new guys to do shows as well. So what day do you want to start with on our programming schedule for our inaugural week?
Let's do Sundays. Let's do go Sunday and Monday, and then we'll move on.
Okay.
All right. Because so when you presented this idea to me, JR, I was trying to come up with programming for each day. And so I have some ideas I want to throw out at you, and maybe you and Dan can help fill in the blanks or agree, disagree, add to what I have, all right? So on Sunday, I have what we call Sunday Bloody Sundays, okay? Okay. Which is nothing but blood feuds. It's documentaries on the best feuds of all time, featuring bloody matches, hardcore features, you know, except for pay-per-view Sundays, okay, where we have the pay-per-view specials. I've always said that they do a horrible job of making their other shows besides WrestleMania and SummerSlam special. So why building up to Hell in the Cell or No Mercy or TLC? Why aren't they having special features on the network that really play up the importance of this? We're talking interviews with current talent, past talent. I mean, why aren't they having extended interviews about the pay-per-view matches on the upcoming matches on the show? You know, we're doing kind of like the rundown. You could always have like Byron Saxton or Michael Cole or whoever, it doesn't matter, just kind of run down the matchups, you know, throughout the show and have guys interview. Remember we used to do the old face-to-face interviews where guys would cut promos on each other? You know, why don't they do history of the pay-per-view specials? So for 3 weeks out of the month, this is when all the vampires such as myself, guys like Phil Schneider, we're going to get that blood. This is where you put on the warning for the children that this is adult time. We're going to do that on Sundays except for pay-per-view days.
Right.
So I got Sunday Bloody Sunday.
And they almost can set it up like, remember when they did that WrestleMania all day long before WrestleMania 16? So maybe you have in the studio, but you keep coming and going. You do video packages, like you said. You show old matches, and you just replay that, you know, hour after hour leading up to the big event. And you know, you kind of do what UFC does now. They make every event a big deal, and they have tons of build and pre-show and pre-matches, and you just do all that.
Yep.
Start at 5 p.m., go right to midnight, or you know, for the live stuff, but all day you have the build. And we can even work backwards for one shot to Saturday. On pay-per-view weekends, all day Saturday, I would show historical versions of that pay-per-view. So
right.
Saturday to me can be like our old pay-per-view night the other 3 weeks. So since Sunday's going to be Bloody Sunday, I say Saturday nights is always an old pay-per-view that's timely to that time period. So we're in September now. I'm showing a fall brawl with the War Games every Saturday night for September. But what we also do is the weekend.
Any of these old territories where they might have some old house shows from AWA or Florida that happen in September, you know?
Right. And then my thought is on the pay-per-view weekend, so say we have Hell in a Cell coming up, all day Saturday would be all old Hell in a Cell pay-per-views to get you ready for the next day.
I have no problem with that whatsoever. And that helps fill in my Saturday. Now, on Monday, what I would do is I would make this the Raw extravaganza. And so first off, since it's the beginning of the week, we're going to do This Week in WWE, where you recap the rest of the week before. You kind of have a Sports Center type program, right? Mm-hmm. Where you just show clips, whatever. Maybe charity events. You know, we always hear John Cena did this, John Cena did that, you know. We'll do that, you know, or like when Daniel Bryan had a his yes chant was huge, and they had that entire college arena chanting it.
Yes.
Well, that's the time you show that, or you show, you know, John Cena hanging out on set, you know, recording his movie, or, you know, you have whatever. But mm-hmm. but you make it real news, a real news program, kind of like the Sports Center for WWE. And
Baylor,
the rest of the day,
maybe you can borrow the coach from ESPN for that show once a week.
Sure. And then you do a Raw's War preview where you actually tell us what matches are going to be on the show, mm-hmm. like they used to do. This is the day that you're going to do your Monday Night Wars programming, your classic Raw moments. This is when you show old Nitros and Raws throughout the day to kind of fill in the gaps. I wouldn't even show complete shows because I don't think they're successful. But if they showed like clip programming, like, you know, Nitro's funniest moments or Nitro's biggest feuds or, you know, something like that, like kind of like a VH1 does with their countdown specials.
And I do think you could at least,
that would be really great.
And I agree. And I think you could at least show one old one. Like I'd start at the top of the wars. So
like a really classic episode, like the NWO episode where they shoot Rey Mysterio like a lawn dart.
Well,
you know,
I do that
like
as a highlight show in the afternoon, but then leading up to Raw, we're going to have the pre-show at 7, we're showing Raw at 8, and then after Raw ends at 11, I start in September 95 and I run the Raw Nitro right after it. So if you want to stay up after Raw, you didn't get your fix enough, we're going to show you the September 18th Raw and then September 18th Nitro from 1995 after each other too. So maybe we open Tuesday morning with that too for those that couldn't stay up and watch it. So every week you progress chronologically in the late night slot.
Well, I have no idea what to do on Tuesdays. So we're going to, or Wednesday for that matter. So we'll fill those in a second. Then I would go to Thursdays, mm-hmm. which I call Throwback Thursdays. They have all this classic footage. This is the day for old school nerds like me, yourself. This is the day where we're getting world-class specials, Mid-South specials, Memphis, AWA, Florida. We're getting classic documentaries. We're getting wrestlers and retired wrestlers discussing their memories as kids. Or we're getting those classic wrestlers telling road stories. This is when we, you know, have those, remember those round tables,
yep.
where you'd have Gene Okerlund and Dusty Rhodes and Michael Hayes sitting around telling stories? This is the day for that. This is the day where I'm going to tune in. Because
right.
I don't want to miss out on Throwback Thursdays.
And now we're also airing SmackDown, though, live on Thursday night. So before that...
Well,
we're going to do a... or after, we can do like we do with the Raw Nitro. So after SmackDown's live, 8 to 10, then at 10, we do a classic SmackDown.
Hold on. Since they treat SmackDown like it's meaningless, I'm going to treat it like it's meaningless, too. Because they have. They've completely abandoned SmackDown as a must-see show.
Yeah, but now we want it to be a big deal. We're telling Vince, you got to make this a show if it's going to be on our network. You want a part of our network, we're going to make it count. So we build it up like Raw. You do a SmackDown preview show.
Well, let me tell you about Friday.
Okay.
Because we have Throwback Thursdays, but we have Future Fridays.
Okay.
This is – now we're gobbling up all the indies. We've put TNA out of its misery. We now have the rights to air ROH. We have the rights to air Evolve. We have the rights to air – all these indies around the country. So what we're doing is we're doing NXT specials on Friday nights. We're having the older wrestlers discuss new talent and what they feel they need to succeed. We're airing old ROH classic matches, classic Evolve matches, classic matches from Dragon Gate USA and other shows like that. We're showing the future of the company.
And you
so
can
we
also
have,
and you can do it almost like the John Gruden quarterback camp, where he's in the trailer with the QBs coming out, you know, the rookie quarterbacks or whatever, and he's critiquing them. You do something like that with a legend. You know, like Dusty would have been perfect for that, obviously, but maybe you do like with Regal or Arn, where they sit down with a young guy, they watch matches together, and they pick it apart.
Sure. Or have an old guy and a new guy watch a classic match or a famous match and both have, like, their different takes on it from being from two different eras, you know? So that's what I have. So we have, for my thing... Well, I did. Fridays was kind of a toss-up. I had Future Fridays. I also wanted to call it Foreign Fridays, where I air matches from Mexico, Japan, Puerto Rico, you know, which they're actually going to own, or they do own the footage from Puerto Rico now. Maybe some old World of Sport, you know, where we show classic wrestling footage from around the world.
Well, you could do that during the day, you know, like early.
Sure.
That's like a morning thing, maybe. You fill the whole morning block on Friday with that, and then the evening is where the future stuff comes in. So... Maybe you center around NXT and ROH at 8 and 9 and then Evolve. You know, so maybe your primetime block is that those young guys coming up, and then you do the old foreign stuff in the morning.
Okay. Now you touched on Saturday briefly. So are we just calling Saturday like pay-per-view Saturday?
Well, yeah. So the 8 o'clock show will always be a pay-per-view or a major event that thematically ties in, and then we go overnight is ECW. You have to have ECW. So I think the pay-per-view's at 7, right? Pay-per-view's at 7. That goes till 10, and then you run a couple ECWs, 10, 11, and midnight, something like that, the old ECW programming.
Okay. What I also like, and they're doing this now, they're doing this next Saturday, I like the idea of them doing these live specials. So anytime you have one of these live specials, you kind of build up. So if they're doing a live special from Madison Square Garden, you show history of MSG specials. You show classic MSG cards before the show.
Yeah,
right?
forget my pay-per-view idea. Let's move that to another night. So Saturday night, every Saturday is a live house show.
Yeah, and then you do, but like you do kind of like the buildup of the history of the city and classic matches and moments. And if they do MSG multiple times a year, it's okay because MSG has so much history that you could easily fill that 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times a year and never go away.
So this is what we do, and I think Scott and I have talked about doing this, and you may have too. So instead of actually being just a house show, you have a studio show, and they cut back and forth to the house show while wrapping up the week that was. So it's almost like your Monday show, but it's like a wrap up. You're not really previewing anything, but you're, you know, like MLB Network and NHL Network, they cut in live to the games that are going on that night. So we're cutting in live to house shows as we're talking. Oh, right now, you know, Titus O'Neil and Luke Harper are having a great match, or 5 minutes in, we're going to head live to Philly where that match is going on.
That's almost like what Heenan and Gorilla would do on primetime.
Yeah, right.
Remember?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Only this is live. Like, they're actually going live to the arena to show that night show. Primetime, we do need to have on one of these nights, too.
Now, we still have Tuesdays and Wednesdays. What are we doing on Tuesdays and Wednesdays?
So maybe one of those nights. So maybe we move the pay-per-view to one of those nights. Maybe Tuesdays is our pay-per-view night instead of Saturday night. Because if we're going to do the house show now on Saturday night, we don't have that anymore.
Okay.
So Tuesday, let's make Tuesday our you know, monthly thematic shows. Maybe we even air two of them. Maybe, you know, 7 to 10 and 10 to 1 or something like that. We show two shows from that month's past. So maybe we show WDF and a WCW, and then we show something for mid-season, you know, whatever super cards we want it to be. So super card Tuesday.
I like it. I like it.
And then maybe Wednesday is our kind of variety night where we show old prime times. Maybe we create a new
documentary, Stone Cold podcasts.
Yep, that kind of stuff. And maybe we'd show new. Maybe we create a new like version of TNT. You know,
this is when you do your reality TV stuff. Right, like you're Swerved and all that crap, you know. Now, personally, I would never have Swerved on my network, but having said that, if you're going to do shows like that, this is the day you feature those shows, old Total Divas episodes, you know. One of the things I always liked, and see, about a year ago, me, my buddy Charles, and Chris Harrington, who's one of the great wrestling statisticians of our time, we did a Fixing the WWE Network special, and something I really liked, and I don't remember who came up with the idea. I don't remember if it was my idea. I want to say it was Charles's idea, but I don't remember. Go back into the vault.
It's a great episode.
Well, we did the Fixing the WWE series, where I did like a week-long series on just fixing WWE, making WWE a better company. And one of the episodes was Fixing the Network. And one of my favorite ideas is once you get into that late night hour, we're talking from 12 o'clock to 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, liquid television for wrestling. This is just – and they did it occasionally where they would show like random clips of like old classic moments, or they would show like little like 5-minute features on like who was it, Justin Gabriel, what was he, surfing or diving or something. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
They would just show these random clips. Like, you show, the big NWO moment where, the Hall debuts on Nitro. Mm-hmm. Then you flash back to, like, the Road Warriors turning heel against Dusty. Then you go to Mid-South and you have Eddie Gilbert covering Bill Watts with the flag. Then you go to Memphis and you show a crazy studio brawl between Jerry Lawler and Randy Savage versus King Kong Bundy and Rick Rude. Then you flash, you go and you show Mankind's title win on Raw.
Yeah,
then
and,
you
that, go, and that's like our mornings. I mean, it's like the MTV and, when they used to show videos in the morning, right? Just one after.
Bro, this, you're going to tell me that there isn't a market for stoner wrestling fans who wouldn't get off on that?
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
without a doubt.
You know, your night owls would love it. I mean, if they had a Liquid Television type programming for as much time as I spend in front of the computer, you know, working, selling things online, whatever, man, I would have the network in the background all day long if that was the case. As it is right now, unless they're having a special or a pay-per-view event, I don't even turn the network on. I don't even bother. But if they had like a Liquid Television type programming, you know, late at night, man, I'd be all over that, man. To me, it would be absolutely.
You could run it from like 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. every night. I mean, they have enough footage.
I would say even early as midnight, you know, because I'm more of a midnight to 3 o'clock guy. By 3 o'clock, I'm winding down. But I would still continue till 7 for all those late night partiers, you know.
Well, 15 minutes, guys, 15.
And for people getting up for work, they want to throw something on, you watch some clips, you know, 6 to 7 or whatever while you're getting ready. You can do that too. So I like that. That'll be a majority of our overnights. I also think we now have like all the WWE movie library, so we can show those some nights too, maybe. If we need to fill up a night on that Wednesday block where we have kind of our reality live programming. I know, but we own them, so, you know, maybe get some use out of them. So maybe we show Total Divas, Swerved, you know, our new TNT show where we have it hosted by like Renee Young at a desk, you know, and then she's got a co-host with her, and then they have guests on basically the old TNT format. That's on Wednesday night, and then maybe we show a movie either every Wednesday or once a month, or so maybe once a month we have movie night on Wednesday night. So Condemned and Cena, all that stuff that they have. Once a month on Wednesdays, we show those.
Okay. So to recap, what we're doing is Sundays, our Sunday Bloody Sunday, where we kind of have like the hardcore stuff or pay-per-view specials. Mm-hmm. Mondays, we're doing kind of a tribute to the Monday Night War / Raw / This Week in WWE.
Yep.
Right? Tuesdays, we're doing pay-per-view Tuesdays. Is that correct?
Yep, so that's the primetime block. Tuesday night is okay. A pay-per-view.
Wednesdays, we're doing variety specials. Thursdays, we're doing throwback Thursdays, and we're doing future Fridays. And then Saturdays, we're doing the live specials every week.
Right.
Along with, and then we're doing ECW, like, late at night.
Yep.
You know, I wouldn't even object to like an ECW Saturday or something like that, or you know.
Yeah, I like doing the house show.
Classic company Saturday.
Yeah, and I like doing the house show with the live cut in. So even if that runs from 7 to 10 or whatever, and then you do ECW from there on out overnight. Maybe ECW runs all night Saturday night, you know.
And late at night we're doing WTV, where we're doing video clips all night long for like from 12 to 7.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I like that idea. Now, let's look at the network as it is right now, JR, and I'm on the network right now, and I'm looking at, like, some of their specials, okay? And if you've never seen a show, just tell me, and it's cool, but let's look at some of the specials that they have, and you tell me if we're going to keep this special on our network, okay?
Yep.
And there's tons of them. I don't even know if we'll get through all of them, okay? Superstar Inc., where they talk about wrestler tattoos.
Yeah. Maybe not every week. Maybe once a month. Something like that.
Okay. First Look, which I have no idea what First Look is.
So that's a they preview like new DVD documentaries coming out. It's kind of your first look at it. So say the Daniel Bryan DVD is coming out about his career. They'll show you like an hour of the bio or a half hour of the bio on the network.
I don't like it. I think that, you know, if you're going to do it, I think it should just be a commercial. You promote the hell out of it as like a commercial in between shows. And,
yeah, even
and,
if you should make a show like 5 minutes, you know.
Right? Like, so I'm throwing out First Look. Okay. What about my favorite show to hate, Swerved?
Yeah, I think you have Swerved. I think that's fine. I think Swerved, Superstar Inc., those kind of run together, you know.
As co-CEO of this company, I'm going to argue with you about Swerve. I'm axing Swerve.
All right. I don't care.
I take Swerved out. All right. Are you going to Fight Me for Control of the Company over Swerved?
Nope. See you, Swerved.
Something I wish they would do more often. The Stone Cold Podcast.
Yes.
Got
it. Yes, I would do. What I would do is I would hook up with Taz and a couple days a week, because I think he's doing a daily show now, right? Like on, I don't know if it's on, what is it? Play.it, whatever it's on. I would broadcast that live from the studio every morning and do a call-in show.
Well, you know, they did Jericho once or twice. I think it was once. But I would start doing more podcasts. Flair has one of the most popular podcasts out there.
I would do every morning from 8 to 12 or 8 to 11, bring these guys in the studio and have them do a call-in show and talk about stuff. That's your morning program.
I love it. I think that's a great idea. Absolutely. And to tie that in, same thing with Legends with JBL, you know, where he's doing. So I like the idea. I hope we get better episodes. I'm not saying Eric Bischoff. I'm just tired of Eric Bischoff. Like, I don't care what Eric Bischoff has to say anymore, because I don't believe the man. You know what I mean? I'd rather get other people. I know Ron Simmons is going to be there. I think that might be interesting. Who else is on the docket for Legends with JBL?
I've not seen otherwise, but I do know Table for Three has a new one out with the women, Ivory, Molly, and Medusa.
Okay, and then they did Gene Okerlund, Roddy Piper, and Paul Orndorff before Piper passed away, and they did New Day. So I would keep Table for Three too.
And there's another one coming with I think it's Ziggler, Bryan, and Ryback. I think is the next one.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I wonder why they chose those three of all people.
Yeah, it's an interesting group. But it should be a good one. So yes, I definitely keep Table for Three, and you know, you break up your mornings with all these. These are the kind of show you fill your morning with. So maybe 3 days a week we do the live call-in, and then the other days we fill it with Legends with JBL, Renee Young Unfiltered. Like, those shows eat up your morning blocks, your morning, you know, whatever, tea shows.
Okay. This show, they haven't had a new episode since August 25th. Tough Talk. I don't even know what that is. What's Tough Talk?
That was just the Tough Enough post-game show. So that's gone.
That's why they haven't had one. Yeah. Would you even have Tough Enough on here? I don't know. I don't like the way that they've run Tough Enough the last couple of
times. If you're going to give me the Austin one, yes. If you're going to, and I would show the old ones. I definitely, you know, I'd throw those on too. I mean, that's all time filler.
Part of it
during
history,
the day,
yeah.
You know,
sure.
If you want to show the old ones. So yeah, I think I do that throughout.
What about this? I like the idea because it ties into what I was saying, like a countdown, similar to what VH1 does. The WWE list, I just don't like the way WWE does them. You know, they take something that's really cool and they kind of make it uncool, but that's just me. But I would keep something like that. We already talked about Unfiltered with Renee Young, so we'd keep that, correct?
Yes, yep.
Okay.
I'd make her the star of this network because I think she has a crossover appeal. Like, she'd be like the Michelle Beadle, just beating it into the ground, having her everywhere. Like, I'd make her my face of the network just because she's obviously very attractive and knows her stuff and she's easy to listen to and she has good crossover appeal. Like, that's someone I would use for a lot of these things.
Okay. And I know this is going to be one of your favorites. But you know what? I don't know if they even have this show featured anymore. Or if it's a seasonal thing that they tried. Jerry Springer's too hot for TV.
I think, I don't have to do a second one. I know it ended. It's not like an all-the-time thing. It was like a season of it. So I would guess they'd probably bring it back. But I saw the first few, but from what I heard, like, it actually got pretty good as it went along. They kind of found the groove. And you know what I would bring back as well, Will, is Are You Serious? Remember that? Obviously Josh Matthews is gone. Remember him and Road Dogg sitting down, like, kind of riffing Mystery Science Theater style on old, like, bad wrestling.
Yeah, I didn't like it in the sense that I just don't like Road Dogg. I don't like him as a personality. I've heard things about him that he's kind of an asshole in real life. And so, like, I don't support any Road Dogg on my network. Road Dogg, he's fired from the network.
But you would do the show, though.
No.
You don't like that idea for the show?
Not with Road Dogg, though.
No, that's what I'm saying. If you pick two new guys and you do that style where the
I think that they should do it more often. Where not just the Mystery Science Theater vibe, but just having guys watch footage, period, and comment on it. You know, it's kind of like alternate commentary.
Can I bring in two guys, too, to help get the network going as far as, like, hosting shows? I'm bringing back Sean Mooney as my news guy. He's hosting that you know, morning news show that we're going to do, or the This Week in Wrestling, bringing him back in the fold. And I'm bringing Todd Pettengill back as my hype man. And he's going to do some stuff. Yes, he's our hype man. he's the guy that's keeping you up late at night with the interstitials, maybe, you know, between the shows.
You know, I'm firing Todd Pettengill like in the first week.
No, right? Man, we're gonna bring Todd back. Come on, voice of a generation. I really would bring Mooney back though. I think it'd be cool to have him back in the fold. He still looks young.
Was he the voice of a new generation?
Mooney still looks great. He's still young. I'd bring him back in a heartbeat. Great voice.
I like Sean Mooney. I have no, but Todd.
I'd let him and Renee do those like news type shows. I'd have them host the Saturday night show to, you know, go into the house shows and whatnot.
All right. One of the shows I really like is the WWE rivalries. I think they need more of these.
Yes.
I mean, they haven't done one since January. I really think they need to focus more on like classic rivalries that have happened.
So we didn't really set aside a night, and maybe this is what Wednesday is, for something like that show.
Oh, I did. The Sunday Blaze Sunday documentaries on the best feuds of all time.
Oh, perfect. All right, yes. Yeah, so we show that. And also, remember the WrestleMania series were really good, too, when they first, WrestleMania, like, behind the scenes. Did you watch any of those?
With Daniel Bryan, yeah.
No, well, that too. Those are, like, their biography pieces. I mean the
5 minutes.
Well,
the story of WrestleMania, or whatever the hell it's called.
Well, WrestleMania is going to be a whole different beast, right? Because you're basically going to dedicate the entire month leading up to your WrestleMania show to WrestleMania.
Right, but I'm talking about the series they did with Gary Thorne narrating, like they picked matches and moments from WrestleMania. Remember they did like a whole look at like individual matches and the feud behind it, and they told stories.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. But I think they should do that for more than just WrestleMania, though.
Right, but that's the stuff I'm probably showing on Wednesdays. I think we bump the reality stuff can go whenever, Total Divas and all that shit. I think Wednesday night's our premiere night for unless you make it part of Sunday Bloody Sunday, and instead of on weeks that there are no special events, you premiere something, either whether it's the Greatest Rivalries, History of SummerSlam, WrestleMania, however you want to do it. To me, that's what you do there.
Okay, yeah, I have no problem with that. And then we have... I have no idea what is this. WWE Quick Hits. Is that like what I was talking about?
Yep, pretty much. It's like
okay.
The Liquid TV thing.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't even know that they actually cataloged all of those.
Yeah, they're not bad.
Short segments. No, absolutely not. That's my idea for Stoner Overnights.
Yep.
You know?
I think Renee hosted those too.
Okay. Then what is this? WWE 24.
That was like the Shield thing, the Bryan thing, like their E60.
Yeah, they need to do more of that. Right. I mean, they have cameras all over the place anyway. I mean, it's all digital, right? It's just paying people for their time, I guess. I mean, I'd have to find out like how expensive that is to produce.
Right, I don't think it's cheap. I know they are starting a series soon on the NXT guys that's similar to that, where they're following around NXT and they're doing almost like a. I forget the name of it. It's called. It's coming up soon, though, in October, where they're following an NXT person around and like tracking them.
Now, we already said that for Mondays, we're going to have the Monday Night War, right? Or we're going to have like those specials on there. So that's taken care of. Would you bring back Legends House?
I mean, if we have unlimited budget and we could do it right, I would. Because, I mean, I actually thought it was kind of entertaining in its own right. Yeah, I think I would.
Okay. What about this? And I think me and you may have divergent opinions on this. I don't know. I want to see your take. As Seen on YouTube.
So that would be just matches from YouTube? Oh, theirs? So that's just their YouTube series that they put on the network.
Right.
Sure.
Here's my thing about this. And this is my take on YouTube. I'm taking everything off YouTube.
Yeah,
I want people to subscribe to the network. I don't want one piece of WWE-owned wrestling footage on YouTube. You know, I think that's one of the things they really screwed up on is why get the network, you know, unless you're getting the specials, when I can basically find all that classic stuff on YouTube for free. You know, if my network is going to control this footage, I don't want anything on there for free.
Right.
Okay. Slam City.
Yeah, Saturday mornings.
Okay, so the little cartoon deal. Total Divas.
Yeah.
Are you keeping Total Divas?
E owns it. We'll show the replays as we need. I'm not putting it regularly on the schedule, though.
I think the problem with Total Divas is if you want to reinvent the women's division and get people to take it seriously, you got to kill the Divas moniker. Mm. And, you know, just call it WWE Women or something. You got to change the name. But yeah, okay. We'll let you keep your Total Divas. I know you're watching it every week, so it's cool.
I've actually never seen it, but it's whatever. It's got the I haven't. I should.
One minute to go, guys. 1 minute. Oh,
well, we'll just run down these quick. Yes or no? I think this is a give me WWE Beyond the Ring.
Yeah, sure. That's the documentary. So that's our Sundays.
Yeah, those are documentaries. Not Sundays. Are didn't we say like documentary stuff go on like Wednesdays and like Friday specials?
Yeah, either one.
Okay, Tough Enough. We agreed we'd do it if it was like the Stone Cold style. WWE Breaking News, which would probably be like, well, I mean, it's just breaking news, so yeah we would do that too. This Week in WWE. So
yeah, we talked about that for Monday mornings.
And they need to do that. WrestleMania Rewind, we talked about that.
Yep.
WWE Countdown. No, I believe they should do more of these, like the list. I think people love lists.
Let me ask you this. Would you do a network-only title and have – he has to defend it once a week, whoever the guy is.
Like the TV title?
Yeah, and it's on a house show. Maybe it's on the Saturday night house shows. You have the network title, and it's only defended on those shows that are live on the network.
I think we have to fix what's wrong with the titles we have now first, before we introduce them. I'm not opposed to it. We got to fix what we have. And finally, Culture Shock with Corey Graves, yes or no?
Yeah, why not? Late night, fair.
Time is up, guys. Time is up. And not if Corey Graves' show is on there. No, I'm just kidding. I probably would.
Probably. We just offered you. We offered you the entire wrestling catalog history.
$9.99 a month. Yeah, you know, that'd work for me. Oh yeah, how much is this thing going to cost?
$75. Well, are we doing a? Yeah, but we have the one thing we need to talk about is if it's a network or is it like a streaming over the top deal like they have now, where we have an archive. I mean, we can charge nothing and just make a deal with the cable company and it's just a channel, so people have to tune in. There's no archive available. It's just a cable network.
I don't know. Let's answer that on another show.
Sounds good. All right. That means, gentlemen, it's time for mail. I said we do 10 minutes tonight. So Daniel McGinn, open the bag, open up your sack, and, tell us about what mail we shall be discussing.
Sounds so bad.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. And gonna cruise that way. Stealing people's mail. Stealing people's mail.
You've got mail.
All right, guys, let's take a look at some mail here. We're going to go to Something Savage. He writes, here's the scenario. WWE is interested in creating a new trios team from members of NXT, similar to the Wyatt or the Shield, what have you. What three guys do you assemble? What's the team name? What's their gimmick? How do you debut them? And what's their first feud?
Oh, man.
Do they all have to be from NXT? What do you think? Do they all have to be from NXT?
Yeah, that was a question, so we'll go with that.
Man, that's hard. Right off the bat, I'm going to say the Vaudevillains, okay, and that Gable guy. And I'm going to have them as, like, uber wrestlers. Over the top, like, just coming at you like little monkeys just jumping on you. Just overwhelming you with wrestling moves.
Yeah, I like that one. That's a good one. How about this roster's really thinned out, huh?
No. Once they started debuting guys, they really did. They thinned it out.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to touch a Tommy or Balor. Zayn's on his own.
I don't know why you wouldn't. I mean, I'm now that they brought that Khan in, I almost wouldn't be opposed to like Joe Itami and Kana coming in.
Joe Itami and Kana as a three team.
Yeah, like Joe is the muscle, Itami is like your flying guy, and Kana is like your looks and like the girl to insert into the women's.
Yeah, that works. I don't think I got it that better. This is based on the roster.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of guys that would blend, you know, and not just be sticking them together like.
Right, and so
I'm not
we
just
going to
stick together like
guys,
Apollo,
right?
Crews, and Rhino, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, well, I mean, like, I think you can put, like, I want to know, are there a couple of other big lugs that Baron Corbin could come in with?
Mojo Rawley?
There you go. Baron, Mojo, and someone else is like your anti-indie guys.
If you want to break up Enzo and Cass, you could put them there. Cass there.
Yeah, maybe. I don't really care about Enzo and Cass. I mean, I think it's, you know, fascinating to watch, but that's that. What's next, Dan?
Good ear, Rice. Guys, with the gift of hindsight, was WWE ultimately wise not to put Daniel Bryan in the main event picture for WrestleMania this past year?
Okay, so I'm going to take this one, JR, because on the board of ProWrestlingOnly.com, Goodyear was giving me grief about abandoning this question. So, for me, Daniel Bryan's title win was one of the most magical moments I've witnessed. You know, and I mean that as a wrestling fan. You know, I think the way they handled his thing, you know, making him work with Kane afterwards was horrible because I hate Kane, and now they're doing it with Rollins. I think
Hang on.
It's a travesty.
Is he saying Mania 30, Dan, or this year, not having him in this year's?
Not having in WrestleMania this year.
Okay. Go ahead, Will. You may have been getting there. I just want to make sure we have the question clear. So he's talking about, was it right not to put Daniel Bryan in the main event of WrestleMania 31?
Oh, well, I still say that Daniel Bryan, you take this two ways, okay? Either they should have never had him in the Rumble to begin with, or if you're going to put him in the Rumble, no, you put him in the main event because he was the most over guy. And you get that Brock Bryan dream match. And then you could have still had Bryan in the main event, right? Because he worked the show. And then you could have still had Rollins cash in. And nobody would have been damaged by Bryan getting pinned by Rollins, right?
Right. I think the key is not having moment. Right. The key is not having Bryan win. I mean, he's going to lose. That's the key.
Well, he was going to lose anyway.
Right.
Against Brock, not going to beat Brock. And Seth Rollins was going to cash in anyway. So I think they were wrong to this day, and they damaged Roman Reigns, and Roman is just another guy on the roster now.
And if they were going to have Bryan, I just would have not had him in the Rumble at all if he wasn't going to win it. Because I think that has got people's hopes up and pissed them off more. They should have not said he was cleared until, like, February. And then you have him come in. And
yes. And it damaged Reigns. It made people hate Reigns. You know
what
I mean?
But even if you want Reigns to fight at Mania, if you don't want Bryan to be the guy at Mania, then don't have him at the Rumble. Say he's still hurt and he's going to make it back in time.
Absolutely.
The killer was having him, hot-shotting him back for the Rumble, and then not having him win is what started the, you know, downfall for them.
Agreed. But no, he definitely should have been in the main event. It would have been successful. And they could have continued Reigns' rise, you know, on another path. So that's my take. Maybe have Reigns go over Triple H instead of that horrible Triple H Sting match.
Yeah, you could do something like that. But you're right. It definitely damaged Reigns. And now you can see what they've had to do as a fallout is continue to rehab him and hope he gets it back at some point.
So hopefully Goodyear's happy with our answer.
All right, Dan, what's next?
We got overbooked, right? And considering the current rate of growth, how many wrestling podcasts will there be in 5 years? And what will the average length of each episode be?
Depends if Parv's involved.
No, actually, you know what? I'm going to say that there's less than ever, because I think within 5 years, wrestling will be less popular than ever.
I mean, at some point, it's probably going to saturate. But I think it'll always be there, because I think, you know, wrestling fans always enjoy being part of the forum. I mean, there's still a lot of message boards and blogs out there talking wrestling. So I think now that we have the technology and the capability, I think, while yes, there may be oversaturation, I do think it'll continue because wrestling fans by nature want to have that outlet. And it's such a insulated fandom that many have where, I mean, I still see so many people say they have no one in their real lives that they interact with about wrestling. It's all internet-based. So they're friends, they're wrestling fans. And so I think that outlet and way to communicate will always be there. So I would say that they'll continue to grow for a while, and I think they'll exist. I don't know if there'll be a ton more. I think I do wonder if the fad of wrestlers and, you know, people like that having them continues. That intrigues me. Like, there's a ton of those now too. Like, I don't know if those will continue to happen, but I think from a fan point of view, like, guys like us will still be doing it. Yes.
Yeah. Could you imagine our fifth year anniversary of the Dangerous Alliance podcast?
Shit, we're almost there with Place to Be podcast. We'd celebrate our fourth anniversary back in February. So.
Oh man, yeah. So I mean, who knows? I honestly though, I think it's going to go the other way. I think some people, I think, like, put it this way, I've had like 17 different podcasts in the last 5 years. You know,
right? We're coming up on our fourth. I should say we're just, in our fourth year.
Partially bad fortune, partially falling out with co-hosts who go on to bigger and better things or have different things in their lives. I don't know, man. I think if WWE is the main form for wrestling and they don't start changing the way they do things and start refreshing, because we're seeing their numbers go down and down every week, they really need to make the show fresh and new and exciting again.
Could that lead to even more of these types of shows as people try to find alternatives and they gravitate towards,
well, like, to me, alternatives are going to be doing podcasts about other loves. Like,
right.
I would rather go do a podcast with Reesh than I would do another WWE podcast besides the reaction shows.
But I'm saying, even if, so we hate WWE, say, in 3 years, but now we start gravitating towards each other because we all love, you know, whatever, local promotion. So we start talking about that on our show. So maybe stuff like that crops up because you're looking for an outlet, because people become more and more disenfranchised with the big promotion.
I don't know. I just think you're going to see it half, the glass half full. I'm going to see it half empty on this one, JR.
All right. Well, I'm thirsty, so it's supposed to be all empty.
What do we got, Dan?
Well, speaking of blood and drinking and Game of Thrones, Justin
yes.
Pratt writes, let's cue a little U2 Sunday Bloody Sunday for this one. What are your favorite bloodshed moments in wrestling?
Oh my God, this is another Sophie. This is amazing. I mean, there's Eddie getting busted up by JBL, all-time bloody moment. There's Hector Guerrero and Jose Lothario bleeding like stuck pigs, which you can see on NWA Classics, by the way, from Houston. There's one of my favorite moments is Hacksaw Jim Duggan pulling Ted DiBiase's tuxedo shirt off, his white tuxedo shirt, and the shirt turning red as it covers DiBiase's face. DiBiase getting busted open by Dick Murdoch and Ric Flair in a classic match from Mid-South in 1985. There's too many to mention, man. I'm overwhelmed by all the great bloody moments in wrestling history. MS1 versus Sangre Chicana from CMLL. Man, there's just so many.
I mean, one of the most famous, obviously, Austin Brett at Mania 13.
That's a great match.
One of my favorites is, it was back-to-back Blade Joss, pretty much, when Shawn Michaels busted Taker open up on Raw when he was doing his heel turn. They had a tag match, Taker and Mankind against Michaels and Triple H, and Michaels just pasted him across the face, and Taker did this nasty blade job. He basically slit the whole top of his head open. It was just gushing. I mean, just like true Crimson Mask. And then Michaels did it at Bad Blood 97 in the Cell, paying that off. Both two really good blade jobs there, too.
Rick Flair's done some great blade jobs. Tommy Rich and Eddie Gilbert in the Memphis studio was awesome. Magnum TA and Tully Blanchard in the I Quit Cage match from Starcade. Another great Starcade moment. The Bloody Ear of Roddy Piper from the Dog Collar match. Man, there's so many great bloody moments in history.
Bret Hart, British Bulldog, Get In Your House, the one in Hershey. It was like kind of the first time they bled in forever. Vince... they lied and told Vince it was hard way, but it was really Bret had bladed and it was staining the light blue mats, and his blood was just completely staining everything.
Yeah. So
cool. Is that it, Dan?
That is it, guys.
All right. Good stuff. Quickly, DisplacementNation.com. We got some really good stuff up over the last few days. Stephen Graham starting a series that's going to be monthly here. Who's next? A look at Goldberg's career. So he's going month by month, and he's paralleling Goldberg's run and his rise to fame. So this month is a look at all of his televised matches from September of 1997, and then next month he'll do all his televised matches from October. And he's reviewing them, and he's going to keep track of his streak and as he builds and builds and builds. So that'll be a monthly installment here from Stephen Graham. New Between the Sheets, number 10. Will, you were joining Chris
what?
And Dave. Yeah, you and Bix and Chris talked September 22nd to the 28th, 1984. Anything you want to highlight there?
Oh, man, what a insane week in wrestling. Bobby Heenan was banned for life in the AWA. Had a classic Memphis angle, which I actually mentioned on this Dangerous Alliance podcast because it was fresh in my mind. You could listen for that one. Interesting stuff going on in New Japan and All Japan. A classic matchup between MS1 and Sangre Chicana in a hair versus hair match for the Anniversario from EMLL. Tons of great stuff from the territories, from all over. And it's interesting to get Meltzer's take 30 years ago. So, yeah, tune into that one.
Also, had a new episode of the Place to Be Nation Network Rewind series led by Ben Morse. He was joined by our boss, of course, Brad Woodling, and Ring of Honor referee, senior referee, Todd Sinclair popped in, and the three of them talked about Anarchy Rules 1999. So if you want to hear Ring of Honor's Todd Sinclair
Hold on. I got a bone to pick with Brad. I've been trying to get that bastard on a reaction show. Bastard does not count as an F word, folks.
Correct, and he is one, so that's fine.
I've been trying to get him on a reaction show for almost 2 years, and he keeps blowing me off. So I'm calling Brad out on that one.
And speaking of the Rewind series, that's a monthly installment, and there may be a little crossover with the Dangerous Alliance boys and the Rewind coming soon. So we'll talk about that over the next episode or two. New Exile on Bad Street, the 2015 Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame discussions roll on.
Whoa. I want to say you have to listen to that one on Carlos Colon.
Yep, and that's up now, episode 15.
Classic episode. My buddy El Boricua was on that show. He's from Puerto Rico. He watched Puerto Rico wrestling live as it happened. Classic wrestling stories about what he saw on TV from a week-to-week basis.
Be sure to check that out, Carlos Colon's candidacy, as well as episode 14, looking at the Japanese candidates for the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. So Chris has it covered there with all the Exile on Bad Street, as well as Between the Sheets, new Kings of Sports, a new This Week of Wrestling, and a new Super Extreme Vault looking at ECW CyberSlam 99. And, of course, I will direct you to last week's Kevin Kelly show where we had Dan Spivey on, talked a lot about his addictions and his battling back and where he is now. He's in a good spot. Talked about my favorite, Waylon Mercy, a little bit. Talked about his time in Japan. A really good interview with Dan Spivey. Episode 43 of the Kevin Kelly Show. So PlacetoBeNation.com, we got you covered. You can subscribe to both feeds in iTunes. Just search Place to Be Podcast or PWO-PTBN.
And let me throw in one more show that hasn't been posted yet. It'll be posted this week. Phil Schneider and I did a special edition of Digging in the Crates where we talk about some of the best matches that happened on NWAClassics.com. And as y'all know, I'm ahead in the Get the F Out contest we're having. I have a gut feeling that JR is going to mention Triple H enough times throughout the next couple of months where I'm going to be buying him and Dan a subscription to this network. If you are a fan of old school wrestling, listen to that show. If you need something to push you over the edge and you know you just want to make sure that the matches are great, listen to me and Phil praise those matches. Go out, go get NWAClassics.com and listen to the upcoming episode of Digging in the Crates.
All right. Also, if you're doing any holiday shopping, hit DisplacementNation.com. Click the banner on the right-hand side for Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon. You can do all your searching and purchasing from there. Throw a little bit of cash back our way. So, again, find us on iTunes. Rate us on iTunes as well. That helps. And check out the Amazon link, DisplacementNation.com, as well as Scott and I's ebook. It's absolutely free. Click the banner. It takes you to Barnes & Noble. You can download it. It has all our Vintage Vault refresh reviews from 1985 through the end of 92. So, Will, Dan, that'll do it for us here. Later this week, I'll be back with Scott for Place to Be Podcast. Next episode, we'll be looking at WrestleMania 21, so that should be a fun one as well. And then, of course, all your usual episodes of Sports Evolution, and then next week with Kevin Kelly. And then Will will be back in a couple more weeks as well. So for Will in Texas and from Dan in Massachusetts, I am JT in Rhode Island. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
I was on Earth, Doc, yes indeedy. I wrote graffiti on the bus. First I write our names in Carver Plus. With my name last on the looking glass. I seen it yesterday, but still I had to let her pass. Dream of fairy tales, I think of me and Shelly. See, she's my type of hype, and I can't stand when brothers tell me that I should quit chasing.